Welcome to another episode of the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast. I'm your host, Charlie. Today, we are going to be doing something a little different. We're going to do a species spotlight on the fin whale. Before we get into that, though, I did want to make an announcement that we do have merchandise, particularly clothing, for sale at the Paul Watson Foundation shop. If you go to paulwatsonfoundation.org, and you scroll down on the main page, you'll see a shop banner on the right side. And if you click on that, it'll take you to the shop. It took us a while to get merchandise on the shop for sale because we really wanted to find a source of clothing that met our standards, quite frankly. A lot of clothing that's manufactured in the world is done so in an environmentally damaging way. When you start with fabric, it's called greige fabric, and then you have to dye that fabric. That dyeing process can get a lot of pollutants into our river systems, which then end up in our oceans. So we're really proud of the fact that we were able to partner with a company called T-Mill, and they're based on the Isle of Wight out there in England. And they are able to use organic cotton that's grown in India, and at the plant that they have in India where the clothing is made, they're able to recycle all the water and such that's in the dyeing process so that the water that comes out of the plant is drinkable. And we actually have a video of that process. If you go to the Paul Watson shop, you can also get there by going to shop.paulwatson.com. If you click on clothing and accessories, there'll be a menu that pops up, and at the bottom it says how it's made. And if you click on that, there's a YouTube video that you can watch, and you can see the process of how the clothing is made. What's also really special about T-Mill is that they use a print-on-demand system. So what happens is if you, the supporter, chooses to go online and order a hoodie, let's say, they will take a blank hoodie off the shelf. Let's say you order a medium. They're going to take a medium hoodie off the shelf. And then there's some different designs and such that you can order. So whichever one you pick, they will then screen print that hoodie and put it in packaging. And the best thing about the packaging is there is no plastics used in their packaging, which I love that. And also their packaging is made from excess paper materials, but also sometimes the excess cotton, they are able to make paper out of it, which is also, I think, shown in the YouTube video, which is really cool. So point being is that we're not using plastics for the packaging, which is a really big deal, obviously, for our oceans and for our environment. But again, your hoodie will be printed, it'll be put in this great packaging, and then it is shipped to you from their location in England. So by doing it that way, we're not, you know, ordering in excess of a certain, let's say, logo that, you know, maybe people like, maybe people aren't as excited about. So there's less waste, right? There's less going on in terms of inventories and trying to guess how many people want a purple t-shirt with a certain logo on it. We don't have to do any of that. So that's really wonderful. And like I said, we're really proud of this partnership with T-Mill. And I think you'll like what they have to offer and what we have to offer. So please do go and check it out. And just know that if you do purchase a t-shirt or a hoodie, just know that, you know, you're helping our foundation, you're helping fuel our ships, you're helping us move forward with the important campaign work that Captain Watson would like to do. And I've, you know, spoken a lot with the folks over at T-Mill, and it seems like a great group of people that really do care about the environment and really are trying to make a difference. And in today's world, that's kind of hard to find. So I do hope that you'll be able to support the Captain Watson Foundation in that way. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that if you would like to connect with the podcast on Instagram, you can do so at CPWF_podcast. If you look us up on Instagram, you can send us questions. And when we do get Captain Watson on the podcast, we pick a few questions to ask him. So please do connect with us in that way. We really appreciate it. So let's move on to the topic at hand, which is the fin whale. I'm going to start with just some facts and figures. And the reason I wanted to do this is because, you know, a lot of times we talk about what Captain Watson's doing, what he and his crew are doing to try to protect whales. But we don't often get to talk about some of the things that make these specific types of whales so magical and so wonderful, and why, you know, they're such an important part of our Earth. So I wanted to just go over some things just in case you don't really know much about the fin whale. So the fin whale is the second largest of all whales, and for that matter, all animals on Earth. They can reach about 88 feet in length, which is, for our other folks, international folks out there, 27 meters, give or take. The females are larger than the males. Interestingly enough, though, in the northern hemisphere, fin whales, on average, are about 5 feet shorter than those from the southern hemisphere. The fin whale can live to be about 90 years old. I saw some different estimates. Some people said like between 85 and 100 years. Point being is that, you know, they can live a long time, and they certainly have seen a lot of things with their migrations and everything. Fin whales are part of, you know, the baleen whales, and so they don't have teeth. So they do lunge feeding, and they'll feed on different small organisms like crustaceans or fish. One of their favorite food items, especially off of the coast of Antarctica, are krill. And krill are little shrimp-like looking creatures. And in one gulp, they can swallow about 10,000 krill. And in a day, they can eat about 2 tons of krill. And it's absolutely crazy to see them do this. Fin whales are one of the only cetaceans that are asymmetrically colored. Or actually, they're the only cetacean that's asymmetrically colored. The right side of the fin whale's lower jaw and its right baleen plate is white, and those on the left side are dark. And I think scientists have wondered if this is something to do with their feeding habits. Is it more advantageous to show the white side to the prey, or maybe the dark side? But then I think observations have shown that they kind of use both sides when they eat. So I think it's still a mystery. If you do know why they are asymmetrically colored, please do reach out to us at the podcast, because I would love to know the inside scoop on that. So fin whales migrate between poleward feeding areas in the summer months and the lower latitudes in the winter months. And so because there are populations of fin whales in the northern and southern hemispheres, those migration patterns are different, right? Because the summertime here in the northern hemisphere is the wintertime in the southern hemisphere. So they're moving in different directions. Fin whales can be found from the ice edge of the Arctic and the Antarctic to the lower latitudes of about 20 degrees north and south. And like I mentioned before, the fin whales in the southern hemisphere, they eat a lot of krill, whereas the northern hemisphere fin whales are mostly eating fish like capelin, anchovies, and herring. Fin whales gestate for about 11 months, and they give birth to one calf about every 2 to 3 years. When the fin whale calf is born, it is about 6 meters or 20 feet long. The calves are weaned at an age between 7 and 11 months. And when they are weaned from their mom, they're about 40 feet long then. I saw different data on when fin whales reach sexual maturity, but it seemed to average out to around 6 to 7 years. I did see one report that said that about a century ago, fin whales, the sexual maturity age for fin whales was higher. It was more like 10 to 11 years. And yet recent populations of fin whales, the sexual maturity rate has gone down to 6 to 7 years. I couldn't find any more scientific evidence as to why that was, but I thought it was interesting and worth sharing. So fin whales are fast swimmers. They're very long. They're very sleek. They're really fast. And so back in the the old days of whaling, you know, sailboats and things would have a hard time catching up to fin whales to hunt them. And obviously that changed with, you know, steamships and things like that. So, and so let's talk a little bit about whaling and fin whales. So I have here a chart, and it's really fascinating. And let me read to you the book it's from. It's from Men and Whales. It's by Richard Ellis. And so he has a chart here, and it's the number of whales killed in the Antarctic, right? So we're just talking about the Antarctic. We're not talking about globally. But it's the number of whales killed. And there's five different types of whales in this chart. The blue whale, the fin whale, the sei whale, the humpback whale, and the sperm whale. And so from about 1919 all the way to 1970, they have figures for how many whales of these different species the whalers killed. What's fascinating about looking at this chart is that you can see this growth of the blue whale in terms of the numbers are growing in terms of how many whales are killed year over year. And in about at 1930, they documented 29,000 blue whales were killed by whalers. In that same year, 10,000 fin whales were killed. 145 sei whales were killed, 576 humpbacks were killed, and 51 sperm whales were killed. And again, this is just what's actually documented. So I'm sure there were more whales killed that, you know, people didn't keep records of. But getting back to my point, in 1930, 29,000 blue whales were killed. And then from that point, you see the blue whale numbers go down. They never get back to 29,000. And so, well, what happens? Well, these whalers are like, okay, so we killed a ton of blue whales here in the Antarctic. So now we got to find a different whale to kill. And so what whale did they move on to? Well, they moved on to the fin whale. The blue whale, as we all know, is the largest of all whales. And the fin whale, being the second largest, I guess, was, you know, their next target. So in 1937... Well, let me go back a step. In 1936, the whalers killed 14,000 fin whales in the Antarctic. The next year, 1937, they killed 28,000. So they doubled the amount of fin whales they were killing. Whereas in 1930, like I mentioned, they killed 29,000 blue whales. The next year, they only killed 6,000 blue whales. And I'm sure it wasn't for lack of effort. So the fin whales, unfortunately, kept getting killed at an alarming rate. In 1938, they killed 20,000 of them. In 1939, they killed 18,000. And then in the year 1940 to 1945, few fin whales were killed. Well, what do we know was going on then? World War II. So people were occupied killing each other. So then, moving on, to 1949, things start to get bleak again for the fin whale. 20,000 fin whales killed. And 1950, it's 19,000. 1951, 22,000. 1952, 22,000. 1953, 27,000. 1954, 28,000. 1955, 27,000. 1956, 27,000. 1957, 27,000. 1958, 27,000. 1959, 27,000. And then 1960, 28,000. 1961, 27,000 again. And then in 1962, those numbers start to drop. 1962, 18,000, 1963, 14,000, 1964, 7,000, 1965, 2,000, and it stays around there. So it's incredibly sad to think that 27,000 fin whales had to die every year for that long. For that many years in a row, we were killing 27,000 fin whales, the second largest animal on Earth. And we were clearing the oceans of 27,000 fin whales per year. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine the amount of whale carcasses that were dragged onto the decks of ships and were processed. It's just mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling and it's sad. You know, the blue whale, like I mentioned, in 1930, they killed 29,000. In the mid-1930s, they were killing around 14,000 per year. And then in the 1950s, when they were killing all of those fin whales, they were killing about 3,000, 2,000 blue whales per year. And then it just kept getting smaller because they were running out of blue whales to find to kill. So, you know, and then after the fin whale, when the fin whale death numbers go down, the sei whale numbers go up. And the sei whale is similar to a fin whale, but smaller. So, you know, it's like they're just hunting down the food chain. You know, they killed the blue whale. They brought it to the brink of extinction. Then they did that to the fin whale. Then they're doing that to the sei whale. And so forth. So they're trying to find different animals to hunt. And again, this is just in the Antarctic. So in the northern hemisphere, near the Arctic, you know, sperm whales were dying per year between the years of 1960 and 1970. They were killing Russian and Japanese whalers were killing about 20,000 sperm whales a year. So we were just mercilessly slaughtering whales left and right all over the globe. Yeah, so it's really hard to mentally wrap your head around the death. You know, just to put it in another way, more than 780,000 fin whales were killed between 1904 and 1976. Their population was reduced to about 2% of its pre-whaling size. And I think estimates guess that there was around 300,000 of them once the whalers had stopped mercilessly slaughtering them at the level that they were before. Which brings me back to why I wanted to do the species spotlight on the fin whale, because in Iceland, And this number might be bigger now, but the last thing I read was that this year they had killed about 140 fin whales near Iceland. And look, compared to 27,000, that might not sound like a lot, but when your population is on the brink and you've been decimated, every whale matters. Every whale counts. And especially, you know, large females. The female whales are bigger than the males, and you know, the females are able to produce hopefully strong and healthy offspring. And if whalers are targeting larger whales, then they're taking away a valuable part of the fin whale population that we need to build back the fin whale populations in the Arctic and other places. So, you know, again, it's really disturbing and sad to think about what these whales have been through, how they've been hunted. But there is some good news. And I think the good news is that what we are doing matters and what we are doing works. When Captain Watson sails into these different seas and he protects whales, every whale life helps. It helps us build back in a positive direction that hopefully allows the earth to find its rightful balance without humans messing it up. And a couple episodes back, one of our, you know, previous episodes, we talked about the importance of large whales and the impact that they have in the open ocean on fertilizing the ocean by whales, you know, defecating in the ocean, their poop per se fertilizes the ocean. And that fertilization causes phytoplankton and other primary producers to be able to grow and multiply and flourish. And it's a big chain, but it's also a big part of carbon sequestration, which allows these phytoplankton and other planktonic creatures to capture carbon, which will help our Earth in the long run because of the amount of carbon that we're releasing into the atmosphere. So these large whales play a big role in that. But when you don't have a lot of whales in the ocean to begin with, it's kind of hard for them to provide that function to the globe. So it's not all doom and gloom, though. I did, when I was doing my research on fin whales, I came across a couple scientific papers, and these papers talked about, in a few different instances, large congregations of fin whales that have been seen off of this island in Antarctica called Elephant Island. And this was video footage of this large congregation of fin whales was filmed, and the BBC had a documentary called Seven Worlds, One Planet, which I believe Sir David Attenborough hosted. And so if you want to see that footage and you can have access to the BBC stuff, you can look it up there. Now, if you're here in the United States or elsewhere and you have Disney Plus, Disney Plus, I think, has that exact same footage, but they have a new show called Epic Adventures with Birdie Gregory. And it's season one, episode one, and it's called Tracking Ocean Giants. And at the very, you know, you can kind of fast forward it to the very end if you want, because at the very end of that, I think it's like, I don't know, 40 minutes or an hour long. The very end of that, they show the footage of these fin whales, and it is absolutely breathtaking to see. You know, they show footage from the ship's view where you look out on the horizon and you just see these whale blows all over the horizon, and it's fantastic. And then they have drone footage from above, and you can see the whales lunge feeding underwater and eating the krill. And then at one point, this guy, Birdie Gregory, and some other videographers get in the water with the whales, and one of them, or a couple of them, pass by the divers as they're in the ocean, and you get to see a fin whale underwater up close, which is pretty spectacular. What's interesting about this is that, you know, they, scientists, researchers, haven't seen fin whales congregate like this in a long time. And I think that's just because their numbers haven't been there for them to be able to do so. So, you know, imagine now that they're able to hopefully build back their population, and they're able to demonstrate some of these large gatherings at feeding grounds. You know, that could have a big impact, not just on the feeding ground itself and the immediate animals around it, but it'll have lasting impacts for our environment and for other parts of the world. What happens in one part of the world, you know, has a domino effect in other parts, especially these migratory whales, because they're traveling thousands of miles from warmer waters to colder waters. They go to the colder waters to feed, and they go to the warmer waters to have their young. So, you know, I just can't, I guess, say with overstate enough, how important it is that we're allowing these whales to come back. And we need people all over the globe to protect all these whales, not just fin whales, but lots of other whales. And hopefully we will be successful in stopping whaling from happening in Iceland, because there's different populations of fin whales. One researcher that I read, they were able to hear four distinct fin whale songs. And this research was happening in Southern California and also in the down south in Mexico. And they heard four distinct whale songs. And what they came away with was that there are four distinct populations, because that what they were saying was that the whales don't, if a whale goes from one location to another, they don't change their song. They keep the song that they had. So in that way, you can kind of see like if populations are mixing and if they're moving around. And they said that fin whales will move around to find their prey. So that's interesting. So whatever fin whales are up there in Icelandic waters, I mean, those are some distinct fin whales. Those fin whales aren't the same ones that we're talking about down in the southern hemisphere in Antarctica, or the ones that might be in California. So it's just really important that we protect all these different types of whales and that we look out for them. And that's something that obviously Captain Watson has dedicated his life to. And, you know, all these different whales are contributing to our environment and the environment in which we live. So I would recommend that if you get a chance to check out that footage, even if you just Google it and you just type in, you know, fin whale BBC fin whale congregation, there's like a 3-minute video where you can see the drone footage of it. It's pretty incredible. It's really cool. I mean, I've never seen a whale underwater. I have seen humpback whales at the surface. What's interesting is here in Hawaii, the humpbacks have just returned. And actually, it was yesterday that we saw our first couple blows of humpbacks. And it's always such a magical thing. And it just, you know, it never gets old. And I hope wherever you are, if you're able to see whales or just observe them from a cliff or on a boat, that you do so. And if you can't, I do hope at one point in your life you get a chance to. Because once you get a chance to, it's absolutely magical, and it stays with you forever. And it just underlines the importance of us doing everything that we can as human beings to try to protect them and just let them live their lives, because they deserve that. So, the fin whale, the second largest whale and the second largest animal in the world, it deserves our protection, and Captain Paul Watson he's dedicated to protecting it. So let's wish Paul well here in 2023, and let's all do what we can to try to help Paul and his crew achieve their goal of protecting this magnificent species that does more for us than we do for it. So it's time to return the favor. Thanks so much. Again, I appreciate you listening to the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast. I hope everybody has a happy holiday. And until next time, look forward to speaking with y'all. Thanks. Bye. Wanted to add one more thing before I do say goodbye. Paul recently wrote a newsletter, and it's very moving. If you do not get Captain Watson's newsletters, please do go to paulwatsonfoundation.org. If you scroll down to about the middle of the page, in big letters, it says sign up for our newsletter. So I would encourage you to sign up for Captain Watson's newsletters. He did write about his motivation for returning to sea and protecting whales. And he also mentions the power of seeing a dying whale and looking into the eye of the sperm whale that he saw get murdered right in front of him. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, please do sign up for the newsletters, because I think they're tremendously informative and rewarding to read. Lastly, I also wanted to mention that today's episode is brought to you by Balaenoptera borealis. Thanks so much.
If the oceans die, we die.